Hello, welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Can we have civic discourse in these fractious times? My guest this week is Manny Yakutiel, activist and owner of the restaurant, bookstore, and civic event space, Manny's. Manny opened what he calls his people-powered and community-focused meeting and learning place in San Francisco's Mission District on election night in 2018 to encourage civic discourse and engagement. He's since hosted hundreds of events, initially in person, but now virtually, of course, on topics ranging from politics to climate change to criminal justice reform and LGBTQ rights. Manny's guests have included Black Lives Matter co-founder Alicia Garza, former President Barack Obama's campaign manager David Plouffe, and during their campaigns, Georgia's new Democratic U.S. Senators John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. The goal of Manny's work? Better informed and more involved citizens, says his website. For this, Manny has received local and national attention. His civic engagement space was named a Small Business of the Year by the California State Senate in 2019. He's newly confirmed to the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency's board and serves on the city's Small Business Commission. Some of you may have even seen Manny's drive-in presidential debate watch party in the New York Times The Year in Pictures. Manny Yakutiel, congratulations on all you've done so far and welcome to Out in the Bay.
It's so good to be here. And to hear that introduction is very humbling and also very hot off the presses since I was sworn into the SFMTA board yesterday. So very freshly minted board member of the SFMTA, and it's exciting to be here. Thank you for asking me to come.
Yeah. By the way, given the political volatility these days, I should let folks know that we're recording this interview late in the afternoon on Friday, January 15th, several days before our radio broadcast, though. You know, things could change, but we'll do the best to keep current. All right. So Manny, in this particularly, shall we say, interesting time to own a civic engagement space, tell us when and why did you decide that San Francisco needed a space like Manny's?
The when is a little bit harder to answer than the why, since the idea for a physical space for people to go to become more engaged in civic and political life happened over the course of a few months. You know, the election of Donald Trump, and then seeing so many people for the first time in their lives ask that question, where can I go? I want to get more involved. I want to be, you know, this is crazy. What happened? I'm concerned. I've woken up, people have said. And just seeing that there, where are all these people going to go? I remember I was at the Women's March in Los Angeles at the time, and I saw, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And my thought was, you know, we need to capture the energy in the air and bring people into the work over the next 4 years if we're going to make sure this never happens again. And so it just was a problem that was very much in front of me to solve. And I was at the time I was, you know, kind of not sure what I wanted to do next. I had left the Clinton campaign where I'd worked and I was figuring out my next move. And I just really got excited about the idea of building this space. I come from a small business family. My mother grew up in our family's grocery store in Flatbush, Brooklyn. My father is the son of a merchant from Afghanistan. He's from Afghanistan as well, and he owns a small tablecloth company, which I worked at, you know, on the weekends. And so I always kind of wanted to have my own space. I always dreamed of owning my own shop, but I never really could understand or figure out how to mesh that with my love of politics. And so then seeing the need for a space like this very directly put in front of me by people asking me the question, Manny, you worked for Clinton, you worked for Obama. I've never done anything political in my life, but now Donald Trump has been elected and I want to get involved. And this longstanding desire to be a small business owner came together right around December and January of 2016.
So how have the events of the last few weeks and months, you know, the false allegations of a stolen election, the Warnock-Ossoff victories in this insurrection at the Capitol, how has that all affected your view of the role of civic discourse?
Wow. Well, I don't think we needed all of this to prove the need for spaces like mine, like Manny's, to have real high quality, respectful, in-person civic discourse. But I think it's just a very extreme example of how the internet is not the best place to engage in civic life, in my opinion. Anonymization, you know, false claims, disinformation, echo chambers, you know, this stuff kind of existed pre-internet, but really the internet, you know, accentuated it in a very intense way very quickly. And I don't think the insurrection would have happened without Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And we used to go to places to engage in political discourse. You know, the union halls, the political coffee shops of San Francisco, lecture halls, even the dinner table. I mean, these were all, this is where we figured it out. And my worry has been that the internet has supplanted these spaces, and that's why I built a physical place. So the insurrection, Donald Trump's lies, persistent lies, have only in my mind reinforced the need for more spaces like mine, where people can physically, or in some cases now digitally, come together to learn from each other, ask questions, and actually learn.
Yeah. So ironically, I mean, we're dependent on the internet now to meet with each other because we're doing it virtually.
I know.
But it's not the same thing as social media. So how have you constructed your events virtually so that you don't fall into that trap of people lurking and then posting weird comments and just dashing off?
Gosh. Well, we've done, since March, we've done about 400 online events, which if you do the math is a lot.
A lot. More than one a day.
And it's so funny because, you know, my whole space was in response to the internet and the idea that we wanted to take these conversations and move them offline. And now I've probably become one of the most, high volume online civic event maker in the city out of necessity. It's not why I'm in this. It is not particularly satisfying, but it is me trying to continue to serve in this time and provide necessary information. For instance, on Monday and Tuesday of this coming week, we're doing a quick 5-talk series on the insurrection from a member of Congress, a constitutional law expert, a legal professor, the former White House communications director, all on various aspects of the insurrection. They're all going to be online and on Zoom. We're going to be cross-posted by Now This, which is a large online progressive media outlet, which has over 60 million followers, and they'll be sharing the talks as they happen. To answer your question, how have we kept the discourse civil and trolls away from it? I don't know. We haven't done anything in particular. We really didn't have – we had trolls in the beginning, but then there are some clever tools you can use, like not posting the Zoom link online, using a tiny URL, making people register in advance if they're going to participate in the talk. But I get trolled. I mean, when Now This posts my talks, usually about 100,000 to 200,000 people will watch. And of those 200,000 people, there will be a lot of Trump supporters. The comments are very nasty, but I don't really read that stuff. So it doesn't really enter into my consciousness because I don't pay attention to it.
Okay. Fair enough. So speaking of the series on the insurrection, that's mostly on Tuesday, right?
Mostly on Monday.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah. Because Tuesday we have our book club in the evening, the Obama book club.
So those of you who are hearing this broadcast on Tuesday or Wednesday, you will have missed that. But is it available online afterwards? I mean, are these recorded?
Yes, they'll be online, both on our Facebook page and Now This, and likely on our YouTube page as well. Welcome to Manny's. That's how you find us on all the various websites. But I'll tell you, I'm excited to go back to offline conversations. There's just no substitution for being able to look and feel and touch the work and the people involved in politics. I can't wait to have John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock as senators come to Manny's. I can't wait for Stacey Abrams. I've now hosted like 4 events with Stacey Abrams online. I can't wait to have her physically come to my spot. I mean, that's the whole point.
How are you going to make enough room? How are you going to make enough room for all the people who want to come see her and them?
We may need a bigger venue. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Okay, very good. So just to mention it, those of you who hear the podcast before Monday, you can check out Manny's. Is it Manny's.com?
Welcome to Manny's.com.
Sorry, thank you. Welcome to Manny's.com. Check out Welcome to Manny's.com to get the info on the insurrection series on Monday. So the national attention that you've received for your activism this year has come from conservatives as well as liberals. There was an op-ed by former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, in Newsweek, and another one in the conservative political journalism website, the Washington Free Beacon. They criticized Georgia's Democratic U.S. Senate candidates, Ossoff and Warnock, for raising money at your Save the Senate virtual event. What do you see as your role and San Francisco's role in national politics?
I had no idea that Newt Gingrich included me in his op-ed. So that's news to me. I think I wear with pride the badge of someone who has been able to help and facilitate support to Democratic candidates around the country. they needed and they need that support from places like San Francisco, frankly, because there's similar amounts, if not greater amounts, of at least financial support pouring in from outside of particular states by the Republicans and by conservatives. And until we are able to completely take out money from politics, if the right is going to raise money in conservative strongholds across the country, then we need to show might with might and raise money on our side to support them. And so I think it is the place of people like me and places like San Francisco to financially support Democrats and progressives all over America so that we win these elections, hold power, and make the decisions that we believe are important. You know, I know that there is some concern about Democrats from other parts of the country pouring into states and physically showing up, especially during the pandemic. But I think what I've learned, I've been to Georgia now twice, once before the general election, and then I went back actually physically in person to get out the vote there, is that the concerns about out-of-state folks are a little overblown. That actually most people were really touched that someone would come all the way from San Francisco to have a conversation about why their vote mattered. And so there's worry about it, but I actually think that we're all one country, we're all one party, and we got to stick together.
Hey, a unifier. Yay. Just what we need. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Los Angeles on the west side, Pico Robertson. My mother has kept all of her Brooklyn, though. And so while I was brought up in L.A., my mother is very much a Brooklynite. And my father, like I said, is from Afghanistan. But I grew up in Los Angeles. That's where they met.
So how did you end up here, an activist and end up as an activist and owner of a civic engagement space here? What got you into politics in the first place?
Well, the first time I moved to San Francisco was 10 years ago, the summer of 2010. And I was still in college at the time. And I flew here for a job to raise money on the streets of San Francisco for same-sex marriage. I had recently come up myself, and will remember, of course, in 2008 was when Prop 8 was passed in California, taking away the right to marry for people like me and us LGBT people, and I was infuriated by it. And so in the summer of 2010, I responded to a call, an email, for folks to come out and organize and raise money. And I was raising money for EQCA, Equality California, to bring Prop 8 back to the ballot to undo its work, which ultimately didn't turn out to be necessary. And I fell in love with San Francisco that summer. I turned 21 and I went to the Castro. I had my first gay loves were that summer in San Francisco. And it was a beautiful time to be in the city, the summer of 2010. And so after I graduated from college in 2011, I was an intern in the White House and I received a fellowship to travel the world for a year studying LGBT rights movements. Followed that with working on the Obama campaign. And as soon as we won the Obama campaign in 2012, the first thing I did was get on a plane to move back to San Francisco. And I showed up at the corner of 20th and Florida, having no friends, having no contacts, knowing no one in the city. I had one duffel bag. I had a couch to sleep on for 2 weeks. It was pouring rain. I had no money. And I, like so many people before me, I came here as a gay refugee, basically, a gay pilgrim. That I wanted to be involved in politics. I wanted to go to a place in my home state of California that had a thriving LGBT life, and this was it. And so I moved back really without a plan, just knowing that I wanted to be here.
You're mentioning that you arrived with a duffel bag, no place to go, and you've done a lot of work to help homeless people, for example, in Manny's, right?
Yes, I mean I was not homeless. I had a
camera. I know. It doesn't mean that you were homeless.
Yeah, I didn't want to misrepresent myself, but I didn't have secure housing, but I found it very quickly because I'm very lucky. The restaurant at Manny's is run by a nonprofit called Farming Hope, which actually hires homeless and formerly homeless and formerly incarcerated individuals, teaches them how to work at a restaurant, teaches them kitchen skills, wraparound services, and then places them into a full-time job after they've graduated from the training kitchen at Manny's. So it's farminghope.org. They're amazing, and they can't wait to come back and open the restaurant again. And it's a beautiful program because it gives people the pride of work, right? Actually gives them something to do, teaches them real work skills so that they can get their own jobs and re-enter the workforce. And really proud of that. We've had, I think, 22 people graduate from the training kitchen and now have full-time jobs who were formerly homeless.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You're hearing Out in the Bay, Queer Radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen speaking with Manny Yucutiel, activist and owner of Manny's, the Mission District restaurant, bookstore, and civic event space. You were raised Orthodox Jewish, right? And from what I've read, your faith is still very important to you, yet Orthodox Judaism is not exactly known for being gay friendly. So I'm curious to know how you meshed these two parts of your identities.
Yes. So I grew up modern Orthodox, which is slightly different. There's a lot of different striations of Jewish affiliation. And I grew up in a modern Orthodox family. And I did go to yeshiva until I was 14 years old. And when I left yeshiva, I had to make a choice. And the choice was, do I want to continue practicing my faith, or do I want to forge a new path that did not include this, you know, the same adherence? And I guess what the promise I made to myself was that as long as it felt nurturing to me and that it kept me feeling sheltered, that I would continue to do the things within my faith that felt right. And, you know, I'm proud to say now, I'm 31 years old, you know, I still pray every morning, I still keep kosher, I don't work on the Sabbath. And it is because I am a believer in the Jewish faith and practice. And I have come to understand that and love that individually without pressure from anyone. And yes, the aspect of Judaism that I come from, the part of Judaism, the Orthodox community has historically not been the most accepting for LGBTQ people. It has come a long way since I was in yeshiva at age 14. There's a lot more acceptance now than there was then. The coming out process to my religious family was not easy. But I have to say that actually it went a lot better than I thought it would. You know, my family is extremely religious, and my sisters are ultra Orthodox, is I guess what you would call them now, and which is, you know, much more religious than how we were growing up. And they have found a way to accept me into their lives, into their hearts, and I them. And the last thing I'll say is what I have learned living in a religious family and being a religious gay Jew is that we should give as much open-mindedness to people that we would assume do not love us than we want to expect back from them. Meaning we should not presume that just because someone is extremely religious does not mean that they can find a way within their religious practice to make room to love a gay son or a gay brother, because that has been my experience. And so we need to show acceptance to them if we're going to ask for it in return.
Which I imagine that philosophy would go far to fostering civil discourse among the many factions that we have in this country right now.
Yeah, I mean, my family, they all voted for Donald Trump in both elections. And I worked for Barack Obama and for Hillary Clinton. And I was extremely involved in flipping the Senate and for Democratic candidates. And we love each other. We respect each other. You know, having a Trump voting family, I think, probably has informed how I think about civil and civic discourse. Mm-hmm. And also when not to bring up a topic.
Right. You had a very moving coming out story published in the SF Bay Times last fall, in which you described how your father essentially disowned you. And at least at that time, last September, he had not spoken to you since. Is that still true? Or have you any mending in the past 4 or 5 months or 6 months?
Actually, slightly, yes. I went home briefly around the Thanksgiving holiday, and we had a very short conversation that was a back and forth conversation, which had not happened in a very long time. He was expressing his displeasure for my very intense support of the Democratic Party, and we had a political conversation, actually, about the Democrats and what they stood for and the Republicans and what they stood for. And it was amazing. It was amazing to be able to talk to my dad. You know, it wasn't an I love you conversation, but it was an acknowledgement of my existence. And it showed that, you know, I think the ice is thawing slowly with him. And I look forward to hopefully one day being able to have more than just a short political conversation with him. But we did talk at my family home for a little bit when I was there in November. So happy to report that that happened.
Yeah, that's great. Because like I said, the personal essay was very moving. And it said that, you know, you hadn't spoken to him in 9.5 years. So I'm glad to hear that you have. So let's hear a little bit more about Manny's. Why did you open on election night in 2018?
Oh my God. Well, that was my vision. I wanted to open on election night, which was very hard to do because we started construction in July, only a couple months before election night. And we had to completely gut the 3,000 square foot space and rebuild it from scratch and get all the permits and everything. And to do it in 3 months was unheard of. But the reason I wanted to open on election night was because I wanted to prove the use of the space on the very first night. And that night, if we'll remember, was the blue wave. And it was when we took back the house. It was the first glimmer of hope that we'd be able to stop President Trump's agenda. And I knew that people wanted to watch the I had a good feeling about the night. I thought we were going to win. And I wanted people to watch it in company, in community. And there were no other places that were hosting watch parties for election night because there weren't places that were built for that purpose. I mean, some bars were playing it, but most bars play sports. So I wanted to prove why this place was being built on the very first night, because I thought it would help kind of give us momentum. And it did. We had over 600 people coming that night. People were hanging out the windows and we were all together holding each other when the house flipped in our favor. And so it was about launching with momentum and with the use case front and center.
That's fantastic. That's a great, great success story. Your business model, you have a sponsorship program and people talk, wow, you can still keep a cup of coffee at $1.75. So tell us about the sponsorship program and how it works and how you're able to keep your prices low and serve food that's within, you know, co-op essentially.
Right. I'm very proud of the sponsors program and the individual sponsors that support Manny's. We have no corporate or for-profit or like corporate sponsors or anything like that. The space is fully funded by individuals, people who pay $36 a month mainly to support the mission of the space. And that, of course, in the pandemic has been a lifeline to us. But before the pandemic, what it allowed us to do was provide our offerings, our services, whether it's the coffee and the food or the events, the programming, you know, bringing world-class speakers like Michael Pollan, 17 of the presidential candidates, Nancy Pelosi, all these folks, and not charging an arm and a leg, not charging $30, $40, $50 to engage with some of these luminaries, to charge $5, $10, $8, because it was very important to me that the audience be diverse and the programming be fully accessible to everyone. Both the food and the beverage and the programming. Mm-hmm. The reason is San Francisco is a very difficult city to do business in. Labor costs are high, rent are very high, taxes, fees, all of that very expensive. And what a lot of businesses have to do to survive in this town is have increased their prices. And while I understand that, because the nature of my business was social justice, was political movements, if I created an obstacle for folks, a financial obstacle, then I feel like I would not really be living my mission and my truth. What I would basically be saying is, come get involved in political life, but only if you're wealthy, right? Mm-hmm. Only wealthy people can afford $30 to go to a talk. And I just felt like I could not look at myself in the mirror and do that. And so the sponsors was my solution to basically not charge a lot for our work to make things fully accessible. And it's because of the sponsors that we're able to do that.
And so the sponsors clearly agree with your philosophy that these events should be open to people of all means.
Right. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, if you had the means, if you had 36 extra bucks a month to make sure that there was a space in your town that was providing top of the line, high quality civic programming to engage the public in political and civic life, you know, why wouldn't you support it? And people have been supporting us, and it's been heartwarming and humbling, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We should try that model on Out in the Bay. Kendra, we're going to do that.
You should.
You did some work on international LGBTQ rights. You had a scholarship to go around the world, I guess.
Yes.
Just can you tell us briefly about that?
It was a huge honor. I was a recipient of the Watson Fellowship in the year of 2011. This fellowship is given to 40 Americans every year to travel the world studying an issue of interest to them. And the issue that I applied for and received the fellowship for was LGBT rights movements comparatively in six countries. It was England, India, Australia, China, Singapore, and Brazil. I spent 12 months traveling alone, meeting activists, organizers, elected officials, judges in each of these countries to learn about their respective movements, what they were fighting for, how they were fighting for those things, how they were winning, why they might be losing, to bring that information back to whatever future work I did in the States. What was so cool about it was I had just left an internship in the White House working for President Obama's LGBT liaison, a man named Brian Bond, who was the main point of contact between the LGBT community and the president. And so I was able to bring some perspective from the White House, compare it to what was happening in all these other countries. And I'll tell you, I grew up so much in that year. I mean, traveling alone for 12 months in countries like India and Brazil, you know, it's not easy. I also fell in love for the first time to a man named Dale in Melbourne, in Australia, and I still talk to him every day. So it was a year of transformation for me.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It sounds really, really good. You just, as you mentioned, just got onto the SFMTA board. Is this a launching pad? Do you have political aspirations, or do you want to just keep on running an event space and be a dialogue point?
Well, first, I should say that I'm the only LGBT member of this board, and so I'm proud to represent our community, you know, on this very, very, very esteemed, very public, very powerful board in our city. So I'm wearing that on my shoulders, right? I'm representing our community. I did not pursue this. This board seat. I was asked by my mayor if I would be willing to serve in this capacity, and I accepted her request to serve and to be a part of this deliberative body. So I just want to be clear. It's not like I'm trying to use this membership to do something else. I've been asked to serve, and I said yes. Do I have higher political aspirations? I don't know. Right now, I don't. But I get asked that question, you might imagine, very often. It feels like multiple times a day now. And the answer to that question, which is the honest answer, is definitely not at the moment. I need to save my small business. I want to build more of these spaces around the country. I want to create a network of these civic spaces that can work with each other. And I want to serve my city in a time of need. And right now, the SFMTA board is how I'm doing that. I'm also on the board of my local Merchants Association and the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. So I'm just trying to serve and be helpful right now.
And you clearly are. Thank you very much. Anything else you want to add before we close out here?
Thank you for doing the work that you're doing with Out in the Bay and spending all this time talking to people and telling our stories. So I appreciate you and your work. I know you've been doing this for a very long time. And just want to send you some love and appreciation.
All right. Well, thank you very much. You've been listening to Out in the Bay. My guest this half hour was Manny Yakutiel, activist and owner of Manny's, the Mission District restaurant, bookstore, and civic event space. Thanks for joining me, Manny. Where can listeners find out more about your upcoming events?
Very easy. Just go to welcometomannys.com, or you can go to facebook.com/welcometomannys.
Welcometomannys.com. We'll also have the link on our site, outinthebay.org. That's outinthebay.org, or you can hear this show again and past shows and share them with friends. While you're there, please sign up for our weekly email newsletter. Growing our numbers could help us secure funding. You can also subscribe to Out in the Bay via Stitcher and Apple Podcasts. That'll help us too. Please also consider making a donation to help us keep bringing queer air to your ears. Outinthebay.org. This week's show is produced by Kendra Klang. Thanks, Kendra. Thanks also to co-producer Chuk Nguyen. Want to join our team? We have opportunities. Volunteer, maybe some paid. In front of the mic, behind the scenes too. Finding stories and guests, audio production, occasional tech support, please, I need it. Social media, reporting, writing, maybe even hosting sometimes. To learn more, please email me, outinthebay@yahoo.com. That's outinthebay@yahoo.com. Please send comments too, really. We'd like to know how we're doing. Raves and constructive criticism are welcome. outinthebay@yahoo.com. Be careful out there in this crazy world. Be safe, stay healthy. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining us out in the Bay.